You're listening to the West End Frame Show.
Hello and welcome to the West End Frame Show, putting theatre in the frame and keeping you up to date with everything going on in the West End and beyond. I'm your host and West End Frame editor, Andrew Tomlins, and I have an amazing co-host with me today. I'm so excited. She's done so much. Her CV is incredible. She was on a study Elphaba and Madame Morrible and Wicked. She played Mama Bear and covered the dragon in Shrek the musical. She was Donna and Mamma Mia. But I'm obsessed with her because she sings That Rainy Day on the concept album of Lift the Musical, which any true stagey person will be obsessed with. I was listening to it last week when I was off to Scotland and her voice is incredible. Before lockdown, she was a standby in the West End production of Come From Away, and she's always crazy busy teaching and doing concerts and all sorts of amazing things. So I'm very lucky and grateful that she's found time to do this with me today. Welcome to the West End Frame Show, Jennifer Tierney.
Oh, thank you, Andrew. God, what an introduction. Crikey, nothing to live up to there.
Do you know how lovely it is to be seeing your amazing smiling face?
Oh, bless you. Well, I'm so thrilled that you had me on. Thank you very much for the invitation. It's lovely to see you too. Other humans out there, you know?
I know. Other humans do actually exist.
Absolutely. Nice to be reminded now and again.
So we'll get this question out of the way. How are you? What's
I'm
been going
good.
On?
Yeah,
how are you
I'm
dealing
okay.
with it all?
Oh, you know, like everybody, up and down days, I think, you know, it's a bit of a, what was it, somebody called it the other day, the Corona coaster, you know, some
yes.
days are easier than others, but, you know, I've just been trying to keep busy, and I really, you know, like everybody in our industry, it's a really desperate time for us all, you know, and I think the uncertainty is just, is the more troubling thing to deal with, you know, but all you can do is just keep going and try and keep busy, keep occupied, and that's kind of what I've been doing for the last 4 months now, is just trying to learn new things, develop new skills, try and better myself and try and stay positive even when things seem like it's impossible. So that's all you can do, you know.
But you are somebody who is always normally so busy, and you know jump from shows, you went straight from Shrek and Come From Away, right? And you're always teaching, and you have your own kind of business and do your other gigs, and you're always here, there and everywhere. So do you like that? And do you kind of, does that ever get too much? Because you're always balancing so many things. And B, how have you responded to suddenly not doing 10,000 things at once?
I know it is. Do you know, I'm very, very lucky that I am able to do that and that I get to do lots of different things. You know, I love being in a show. I love the 8 shows a week and I love the routine of it. And I love, you know, being in stable work and all those amazing things, especially Come From Away being such a special show, but also a huge challenge, especially as a standby, you know, the amount of material we have to learn and retain. And I think, to be honest, that I've not, whilst being at Come From Away, I've not done a lot of extracurricular things like I normally would, because I have to really commit myself to that job, you know. But when I do get the opportunity to do things, I love it. I love the buzz of doing different things and the challenge and just trying to keep, you know, as you say, plates spinning is something that I'm a little bit kind of, maybe I don't know, a bit of a control freak about, but I love doing lots of different things and, you know, singing with different people and all that. So yeah, it was a bit of a shock, you know. Well, it was a huge shock, I think, for everybody when that day came and then everything just stopped. But I've been really lucky throughout the lockdown period that I took my workshop and teaching business online, you know, and I never ever even considered that before. You know, it was never something that was even in the pipeline. So for me to be able to have that has been an absolute gift, because mentally, to, you know, to be able to keep working and keep having projects in front of me, to be able to work with amazing students, especially graduates that are going through a really tough time just now, you know, to try and keep them motivated as well. So, you know, there's been a lot of pluses and positive things that have come out of this period as well. But yes, I really miss the normality of trying to, you know, do a million things at once.
How have you found all the online teaching and all the workshops? I know you love teaching, right? That's something you're really passionate
about. I love teaching. I really do. I'm really lucky that it is my other love alongside performing. You know, it's what I do when I'm not in a show. And Yeah, I mean, it's been, you know, it's been a transition, you know, it's been a huge kind of, okay, well, we've got to make this work. Let's get on Zoom. And thank God for the platform Zoom. It's been amazing, you know, for everybody, every business around the world, I think. But yeah, it was a transition, and it was a lot of things to kind of iron out. But now that we're up and running, it's gone so well. You know, it's actually proved to be more successful in some ways than in person, because it's so focused. You know, it's like one-to-ones are literally one-to-ones. There's no distraction around. It's literally looking at each other and having discussions and working together. So in some ways it's actually been better, and I will definitely, when this is all over, I will definitely keep that going, because it seems to be a really successful way of working as a teacher.
Well, how amazing. So if you were back on tour again at some point in the future, then you could still have students and still have a weekly one-to-one class with them, regardless of where you're in the country. I mean, I think it is making people think in a slightly different way when it comes to running businesses.
Definitely. And I think not even just for us, but any business, I think a lot of people have realised, oh, actually, I can probably work from home a bit more than I was before. And, you know, I think there comes a line, you know, you don't really want to, we miss the social, especially with teaching. The social aspect of it is so important. You know, all of these, especially for young kids, you know, that's how they grow as young people, whether they go on to be performers or not. It's the opportunity for them to build their people skills and build friendships and their confidence and all those things as well. Mm. And then, you know, you having somebody next to you doing the same thing as you can challenge you, and vice versa. And, you know, so yes, I think there is, for us in our industry, there's a huge importance of being in the studio when you're learning. But the fact that we can do this in the meantime and then down the line as an extra thing is fantastic, you know.
Mm-hmm. We obviously have to talk about Come From Away a little bit. Oh. And I had the amazing Mark Dugdale on at the start of this series. And I mean, what I was asking him, and I want to ask you as well, is he started out as a standby, and you're also a standby in the show, and you're covering all these roles, which isn't just one character, they're multiple characters. You've got all this choreography. There's so much going on. So when you went into it, how did that for you, how did that rehearsal process compare to other rehearsal processes? How did you deal with that show? I bow down to you. I don't know what your brain must have been like.
Well, I mean, I'll never forget the day. Firstly, Mark Dugdale, who's obviously a very good friend of mine, literally lives a two-minute walk around from my house. I just drove him to the airport the other night so he could go home to family. So we've actually seen a lot of each other during lockdown, which has been great. We've been able to go for socially distant walks and stuff together, which has been fabulous. So the rehearsal process for Come From Away was, tricky. I mean, you know, I'm not going to lie, when we walked on stage in Dublin at the Abbey Theatre, bearing in mind that us four standbys that joined later weren't in the rehearsal process with the others, you know, they had the proper, you know, table work period of time with the director, watching documentaries and interviews and all those kind of things as well. We were kind of just head first into the rehearsal process. And it was quite intimidating. And I remember walking on stage at the Abbey Theatre to meet everybody for the first time. And all I saw was what looked like confetti all over the stage. And I was like, oh my God, oh my God. And I just was like, I don't understand any of this. And it was basically all the chair spikes and table spikes and stuff all across the stage, because each scene is colour coordinated. So it was, that was a bit like, oh, what is all this? And everyone was like, lift your head up. Just don't look at it yet. And I was okay. So, look, it was a mammoth task. You know, it's such a special show, and because we have such a responsibility to the real people that we're playing, you have to get it right, you know. But as a standby, obviously we have these amazing stories to tell, but as a standby we see the show very logistically as well. We have to, you know, the thing is that not any one person has the same track or picks up the same chair as somebody else. Everybody has an entirely different show, whether it be, as you say, choreography or costumes or props or accents or where they're from, who they talk to, you know, all these things that go on in our show. But we are very well looked after. Tara Overfield Wilkinson is absolutely fantastic, who's our associate director there. And Ricky, who was there before her, who worked on the production on Broadway and basically puts all the productions on around the world.
Yeah.
they're so specific. And the show, even though it may not look like it from out front because it's so slick, it's choreographed within an inch of its life, and it's very, very specific, which in some ways is fantastic for learning purposes, but in other ways you have to get it right, otherwise it'll mess up somebody else's traffic, you know. So you kind of have to approach it. Well, I did. I think what helped me was I came from a dance background, so I approached it very kind of, okay, this is what I do here, this is what I do then, that person crosses there, that person, and tried to take the emotion out of it in the beginning so that I could clearly just learn the show literally by numbers. But then you've got to introduce, you know, the dialogue, and then you've got to introduce, you know, choreography and who do I pass. And then also bearing in mind in standby rehearsals, there's only 8 of us. So we don't ever have a full cast in rehearsal. So you've got to imagine where other people are going. So it's full on. It's the biggest challenge I've ever had in my career, for sure. But also probably the most satisfying as well, you know, because it's when it pays off, it's great fun. I love it.
And when you're not on, so those nights when you're not on stage, are you sat there with your Bible going through it, or you're able to unwind sometimes and not think about it? What do you do when you're not on?
I think there's definitely a balance, you know. When I'm not on, generally, I mean, they all kind of take the mick out of me at work, to be honest, because I'm always running around going, does anyone want to do a line run? And they're like, I know, they're all hiding in their tea and digestive biscuits or whatever. And you know, and that joke is kind of stuck now, unfortunately. There's actually a song that Mark Dugdale created about that. I'll let him tell you about that another time. But I am generally, I'm a bit studious like that, because I just need to know, in all seriousness, I need to know that I'm as prepared as possible when it happens, you know, that I have to go on. And I feel like if I don't put the work in advance, then my show will just be awful. And then I'm not very good at my job if that's the case, and put other people off. And so I just always want to know that I've done everything I can to be as prepared as I can, you know.
I'm desperate to see you in the show, and I was so jealous. I know a lovely Kaz Cronin, who I think you know as well, she got to see you as Beverly, and I was so jealous. I would do anything to sit there and hear you belt out Me in the Sky and play that role.
Well, I was very lucky this year, and I managed to get bumped up to first cover for Biv for the second year, so I'll be hopefully when we get back up and running, you could pop along then, hopefully. Come and see Alice as well, though. She's fantastic.
I was there on your media night. So that week, just before theatres closed. I think Come From Air was the last show that I saw.
Was it?
And she was amazing. And do you know what? I think it almost might be the first show that I'd want to go and see again, because we're going to need that message more than ever, aren't we?
I totally agree. And so many people, I think there was something I saw on social media a while ago where people were like, what's the first show you're going to go and see? And so many people said Come From Away. And I think that's why the show is so special, because it really, really hits people and lands with people, you know. And I think coming out of this situation that we're all in, I think it'll give people a real sense of togetherness after all of this, you know. So hopefully people will be able to come and enjoy it again.
I think it's a message that will be even more important than ever, and just a joyous reminder. And I also think there'll be, similar to, you know, 9/11 was an awful thing that happened, but how amazing that this, you know, that these people did these incredible things. And I think the similar thing can be applied to what's happening right now in the world. I mean, we're going through this awful, awful year, but I bet actually stories will come out of it, similar to what happened in Newfoundland, of people doing amazing things. And, you know,
I totally agree. Yeah, absolutely. Maybe in another 10 years we'll have another musical about lockdown. Yeah. You never know.
Yeah, starring Jennifer Tierney.
Oh gosh, I don't know if I'll still be doing it by then, but
oh, you better you dare.
We'll
say something like that
if I'm lucky.
We have lots to talk about today, and I have lots more that I want to ask you. But let's dive in. So coming up on today's episode, we are going to be discussing all things Encore on Disney Plus, as well as the latest news about The Phantom of the Opera, A Little Night Music, Once This Island, and of course we'll be chatting lots more with the amazing Jennifer. Okay, so first up, we are going to talk about the theatre news. And let's get the tough stuff out of the way. Let's get the industry update out of the way. So a couple of weeks ago on this podcast, I was sat here saying that the government had given the green light for indoor performances to resume in August with social distancing. However, this week we found out that this has now been postponed. They were like, just kidding, changed our minds. And that's kind of due to the current rate of infection of coronavirus in certain hotspots across the UK. Boris Johnson has said that previously planned further pilot performances will also no longer take place, but that all of these decisions could be overturned in a couple of weeks. So it's not very helpful. It's more uncertainty. And there's a flip side to this, because I also do like to see response, you know, if cases are going up again. We don't want to wait around, but we need to be so careful with the industry, don't we? Because time frames are key, and we can't put on a show with 2 minutes notice. These things take weeks and months. So I really hope that whatever comes out next is really thought out, and there's really clear risk assessments and all sorts of things in place, because it's just, I can't imagine. Can you imagine what it must be like to be a producer right now? I would hate it.
I totally agree. We're actually in regular communication with our producers. Smith and Brant and Junkyard Dog are absolutely fantastic with us, and they have regular Zoom meetings to kind of keep us up to date and, you know, give us any information if they can. But it's a difficult time, you know. It's like it feels like all I'm doing is sitting, seeing the rest of the country go back to some sort of normality, and we're still waiting on news. And, you know, and the other day, I mean, to find out that, you know, when everybody was gunning to open on the 1st of August and, you know, get these things up and running that they'd marketed, sold tickets for, rehearsed for, planned for, paid venues for, etc., all of these things. And then literally the day before, it was all cancelled again. And it just kind of feels sometimes that, I don't know, it just feels that we're really the last on anybody's minds, you know, and you kind of run out of a little bit of energy of patience, you know. The patience factor, yeah, I think, is really wearing thin now. And it's difficult because, you know, it's not been a great week in the press for various reasons for theatre, you know, saying that there's a possibility that we may not know until November of a possible opening date, you know. And a couple of weeks ago they said, oh, we're hoping to get rid of social distancing by November. And, you know, and for the producers, you know, it's so hard to know what decision to make for the greater good of the show and the industry, and also the longevity of productions. You know, it's because, you know, if something awful was to happen, like a second spike, and then shows were to close again, I don't know how we'd ever recover from that. So yeah, they have to get it right. And if that means, as painful as it is, if that means doing what other productions are doing and waiting a longer period of time for it to be safer, then maybe we just have to accept that and get on with our lives and then hope for the best and have an amazing reopening and then have longevity, because that's really, you know, our industry thrives. It was in such an amazing space, yeah, in the last few years, you know, and yeah, great new productions that just come over from America, and, you know, homegrown productions. And it just feels like a real, it's a massive kick in the teeth to the industry, you know, and we bring a lot of money to the country as well. You know, it's really beyond me why we're not getting more support, even though I know there's a lot of details to come still and a lot more information to come, but it seems to be trickling down. So I think it's hard for people to kind of stay positive when we don't know anything, you know.
I think support and communication, we just need clear communication. And I know that no one's been through this before, I know that we don't know what's going to happen, but the communication just seems to be so up and down and just not there a lot of the time, and not realistic.
I think it's also difficult because there seems to be a lot of conflicting information when we do get it. Like, for example, you can do this, but you can't do that. And you can do this, but you can't do that. And I think, you know, when we're seeing planes full of people flying to foreign countries, sitting with masks on, etc., I think our people in our industry are kind of going, well, why can't people sit in a theatre then next to each other? We don't, you know, it's hard to kind of grasp why one thing is acceptable and one isn't, you know. And and there doesn't seem, they just kind of lay out these guidelines or rules, whatever you want to call them now. I'm not entirely sure. But, you know, they call them these guidelines, lay them all out, and then we just have to go along with it, but with no further information or explanation, you know. So it's tough.
I think the longer it goes on for, the less patience we all have, and rightly so. I think we need better. We need better for our industry. There's talking of poor communication. There's been so much going on with the Phantom of the Opera this week. There's been so many different stories, so many different statements, so many different emails. It's been crazy. No one knows what's going on. So let's try and go through it. So there's been a lot of discussion about Phantom. Cameron McIntosh wrote in the Evening Standard that the show had been permanently shut down. There were some heartbreaking photos on social media of the set being removed from the theatre. It was awful seeing that chandelier on the streets just slumped there. Awful. However, the show's composer and co-producer, Mr. Andrew Lloyd Webber, Lord Andrew Lloyd Webber, has now clarified that Phantom will reopen as soon as is possible. So his company, Really Useful Group, told the stage that Cameron was mistaken in his wording and that when Phantom returns, it will be the original version and that they will preserve what was originally in place. Cameron's team then released a final statement saying a brand new physical production will run in the West End, but that no date can be announced as of yet. All that, so it kind of does tie in with what was originally announced a few weeks ago, that the show will be having an extended closure to renovate the theatre, this is the worst bit, obviously, why all the cast and all the crew and everyone was let go, because that was awful. So I think we can all kind of relax in the sense that we will still have fans and the show is returning. And I can imagine that they've said certain things over the years that, you know, that set was never intended to last so long. And the theatre, I mean, we see theatres all the time closing for renovation works between shows. But they never had that time with Her Majesty's. But again, I feel so sorry for everyone involved because it's been so unclear and so many people have been getting so confused and angry, and again rightly so, because we have no idea what's going on.
This is it, and you know, it's a real shame because, you know, that show is really, it's such an iconic piece of theatre in the West End, isn't it? I mean, it's just, is it the longest running show or is Les Mis? I never know.
It's longest running show on Broadway.
Right, okay, I'm with you. But Phantom is just, it's just one of those classic pieces of theatre, you know, and probably Andrew Lloyd Webber's one of his best works, you know, because it's one of the most successful for sure. So I think it was just a bit of a, you know, a guttural punch, wasn't it, when we kind of heard that news that, oh my God, what if it doesn't come back? But then, you know, there's all sorts of things going on. I mean, I think, you know, if it is an opportunity to, you know, rebuild things or strengthen things or whatever, then great, you know, because then hopefully the production will run a longer period of time. Mm-hmm. But I just feel so sorry for everybody that works on the show. You know, I have a couple of friends that had to go in the other day and clear out their dressing rooms, and one of them accompanied somebody who worked in the show and been there for something like 19 years. And you know, I'm sure, you know, some of them have, I think there's a gentleman in the cast that's been there since the opening night, isn't there?
Yes.
So I mean, you know, for them it's a lifelong commitment to a production, and then just for it to be gone, I mean, I can only imagine. It's, you know, it was devastating for us being in a show for a year, let alone, you know, that amount of time. So I really do hope it comes back, and I really hope that the people that worked on it before have the opportunity to go back if they can, you know.
Absolutely. And people from the tour that got cancelled, you know, I really hope those people get a chance to do it again.
Me too.
Right, on to some positive, exciting things. Yes. There's lots of great stuff happening in this amazing industry. There's still lots of amazing people working their asses off to do things.
Of course, it's amazing.
And make things happen. Let's talk about them. So, first of all, I'm so excited about this. We've got a new production of A Little Night Music happening. Aww. So back in 2015, Alex Parker and Alistair Knight staged a concert production of A Little Night Music at the Palace Theatre. It was one night only. I was there, and I remember thinking, how on earth could they do all this work for one night? It was seemed criminal. So I'm so thrilled that now, these years later, 5 years later, the show is being restaged once again by Alex Parker and Alistair Knight. It's all going to be a socially distanced production, a concert production, and it's going to be staged on the 15th of August at Holland Park, a venue that I've never been to before. Amazing cast. We've got Janie D, Joanna Riding, Hiba El Sheikh, Kai Ushe, Emma Kingston. And the show's, of course, written by Stephen Sondheim and Hugh Wheeler. And it features the iconic song Sending the Clowns. I don't know about you, but I just really miss hearing an orchestra.
Oh, me too.
So I just say, I will do, I don't care where it is or where it is, I will do whatever it takes to hear and witness some sort of live performance, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think as well, we've often said, it's like, God, that first night we're back on stage at Come From Away, and the first time we hear that, you know, that drum, it's just going to be like, but I just want to sit. I think it's amazing. They're doing Superstar at Regent's Park. They're doing this production. There's lots of other things going on. I know the Six Girls and crew got some bad news recently that couldn't go ahead. But I think it's amazing that people are trying. People are working towards getting these things up and running so that it's something happening, you know, because it just feels dormant otherwise, you know. So yeah, I think it's amazing.
Have you done any of these online concerts? Have you had any like recording of you singing in your room or anything?
I did a couple, you know, there's an app that you can record as a Groupon. So I've done a couple of those.
I did Beauty and the Beast, right?
Yeah, I did Beauty and the Beast, and then I did a Newsies duet as well with lovely Joel Montague, who I've actually never met in person, so it was very surreal to sing with him. And I don't know any of the musicians apart from Alan Williams, who's an amazing musical director, and I work with him on Shrek, and he's a good friend of mine, and he's put all of these together, and it's just the orchestra were fantastic, but I had never met them, so it's just surreal how you can all get together for a production.
So crazy, and do it in your bedroom as well, or in your home. God, it's just bizarre.
So yeah, I've been doing lots of these kind of recordings and things like that, but it's really surreal kind of being in your own home, and I know everybody kind of seeing your own home, you know. So but it is amazing. It's amazing what you can do from home, you know.
What's your, like, when you're going for what you'd like, today I want to unleash and do a song, or if you're doing a gig and they ask you what you want to sing, do you have, what are your go-tos? What do you love to unleash on?
Do you know, I tend to not do any musical theatre, if I'm honest. Yeah, I think I'm kind of, people laugh at me because I'm a little bit of an imposter musical theatre, because I trained as a dancer first and foremost at Performers College way back when it was just a dance school. And
which FYI baffles me, because you had the most insane voice in the industry.
You're very kind. But I didn't actually, it was totally by fluke. I had a knee injury when I was at college when I was 16, and I had to have both of my knees operated on, and basically college were really supportive and said, look, you can leave and come back once you've rehabilitated, or you can stay and work on singing and acting. I was like, I think I knew in my heart of hearts that I probably wouldn't have gone back, so I was really lucky that they helped me work on the other things that I had no clue about. So yeah, I never sang in front of an audience till I was 16, so it was I was very lucky that had that support, you know.
That's mad. And then your few years later, you're literally covering Alphaba in the West End.
Well, quite a few years later, but yeah, I did a few bits before that. But yeah, no, it was, I've kind of digressed now. What were we talking about?
This is Tangent Central, which will be in the podcast. I said, what's your go-tos?
Oh yeah, my go-tos. Yeah, so I kind of don't really do a lot of musical theatre stuff. I do some, but like my favourite kind of stuff to do, well, the last one-woman show that I did was at Madame Jojo's, which is now the Boulevard Theatre. I'm so excited to see that space now that they've changed it all around. And there was a lot of pop rock stuff in there, so I did a bit of Alanis Morissette, a bit of Evanescence, you know, a bit of Adele, all that kind of thing. But the songs that I like to sing, and this might take you on nicely to what you want to talk about as well, but the songs that I like to sing in musical theatre are songs like from my friend's musical Lift, you know, storytelling songs that have a little bit more of a pop feel to them, you know, rather, you know, that's kind of more what my comfort zone is. I would love to say, you know, that I've sung the whole Stephen Sondheim books, but all of them, but I am so scared to go near them. But you know, I just think he's an incredible writer, but it's just, I don't know if I could do it justice, but maybe that's my next challenge.
Maybe that's the next chapter. Let's talk about Lift, because I'd never heard the album of Lift, and I knew nothing about it until I went to press night to review the show, and it opened at the Soho Theatre. And it was one of those really special moments, which I can only count on my hands the number of times it's happened when I was reviewing for 5 years. It was one of those shows that just really spoke to me in a really unexpected way. I really thought about it a lot. You know, I got into the routine of seeing a show and writing a review, and I'd move on to the next one, whereas this was a show that really stuck with me. I thought about it a lot. And I, of course, then went to listen to the album, and you're on the album singing That Rainy Day, and I love that song, and it's an amazing performance.
Thank you.
So Tell me about that experience and about that song. And it must kind of follow you around a little bit. People must almost be like, oh my God, I listened to that album, because drama schools still do it and people still sing it and stuff.
I think Lost in Translations is actually more of a kind of common song for performers to sing. But everybody tends to, you know, occasionally I'll get like a snapshot of someone's, you know, iTunes and, oh, this has just come up, or, you know, and to me that show, that piece of writing, Craig Adams, who's my best friend, actually, he gave me an opportunity that I'd never had before to be a part of a show from concept. So, and we're going back to like 2006, 2007, maybe. And he said, look, I need people to sing these songs and kind of wake them up and bring them to, you know, just put them down for me. And I was like, okay. And I was thrilled. And Rainy Day was the first one. And then it just kind of grew from there. And we went into a workshop process with Perfect Pitch, Andy and Wendy Barnes, who are, you know, the Six producers as well now, but, you know, they champion new writing, which is fantastic. And I really wish there was more of that in this country, because there's so many amazing composers, you know, that just need a break and need help, you know, and support to get their work out there. Because when it does come through, it's absolutely fantastic. And I know it does exist, but it feels like in this country, in comparison to America, it's not as supported here, you know. But apart from like Wendy and Andy, have always been incredible with that. I've been lucky to have, you know, workshopped several of their productions. But anyway, Lift is a really special show, and the very first workshop process we did of that, we performed at the Trafalgar Studios in the little studio.
Trafalgar Studios too. Yeah,
that's it. Yeah, and I think it was in 2007. And there was eight of us in the show, and I cannot explain. I know everybody says it. Oh, I got so close to these people, and, you know, it was just an amazing experience. But it really was an amazing experience. It was just, we all just, and it's not like many of us are in touch or anything anymore, but we just bonded in that production, and it felt like we were a part of something really special and really important. And Craig's writing is, I think, is so clever and so unique, and he's such a gifted writer that it felt back then that it was the start of a new chapter of musical theatre. Do you know what I mean? It was just a different genre and a different feel, and something exciting that made people go, oh, much like, I think, in the way that Six did now, you know, where it was like,
Totally. At its time, I think even the way the show was marketed, the photo shoot they had, everything about it visually, it was really exciting. It really grabbed people's attention. And it definitely, for its time, made some really strong steps forward and probably paved way for other things like later. Along comes Six, and that's obviously pushed us forward a lot more, and hopefully we will still start seeing new work being celebrated and doing as well as things like Six has done.
Yeah, I really hope so, because I think it shows that can happen, you know. Like, I mean, Six is globally successful now. I have to say, I'm ashamed to say that I've not seen the show yet. And actually I was just about to book tickets to go and see the drive-ins. I'm so sad for them all, but you know, but when it comes back, I will definitely be there with bells on, because all those girls are fantastic. And I think, you know, and the musicians are incredible as well. And, you know, so I think it's a bit of a beacon of light for musical theatre, in that, you know, it doesn't have to be what we visualize musical theatre to be, you know, it can be something else.
Well, talking of rep, full circle moment, I would love to hear you sing Heart of Stone from Six. I think
I love that song. It's a great song.
I think that's it beautifully in your voice. Yeah.
Oh, bless you. I might give it a go in the car when I'm driving to Scotland tomorrow.
We'll fly through these next few things. So in other news, 11 Queens from Six the Musical. I know that the drive-in tour was cancelled, but the 11 Queens are going to headline a one-off West End musical drive-in performance on the 12th of September.
This is amazing.
It's sold out.
No.
But I'm sure, because it's sold out within 24 hours, that maybe they'll do another one.
I hope so.
Producer Mark Platt is working on a film adaptation of Once on This Island for Disney Plus. Please let that happen.
I hope so. I really do. Amazing show.
Amazing. Rock of Ages is set to embark on a 2021 UK tour. Flowers, Mrs. Harris, which we spoke about quite a lot in this podcast at the start of this series, is set to release a cast recording. It was lovely to see photos of all the cast at Chichester on stage.
I haven't seen the cast. I just saw them. A friend of mine is a percussionist, and he was recording the album, so I knew he was there. But I haven't seen any photos yet.
Oh, it was amazing. Exciting. They all just stood behind their microphone. Just, you know, I just hate to think of these buildings being empty. So the fact that Chichester was filled with amazing people for one or two days singing within those four walls warms my heart a little bit, because I hate to think those buildings empty. Sky Arts is to become a Freeview channel in the UK from September, after the channel's audience increased by 50% during lockdown.
That's amazing.
What more do we need to prove how we rely on the arts in this country?
You're absolutely right, Andrew.
50% increase. See people turning to the arts.
Absolutely.
And finally, Tightrope Productions are bringing two productions to Drive Inside in Manchester. So it's a drive-in venue, and it's they're using Europe's largest mega tent. I'm so intrigued to see what this is like. And one of the co-producers is Joel Harper-Jackson, and he is co-producing and starring in two shows. One's called Power Ballads Live, and the other is Queen by Candlelight. He's doing it with a bunch of amazing people, incredible voices. So if you're in Manchester, you have no excuse. You must go and check this out. Go onto Joel Harper-Jackson's social media, and you'll find all the details there. But can't wait. Can't wait. And then finally, actually, there was talk that Crazy Cox is supposed to be reopening. We don't know what's going to happen now because of these new kind of guidelines in place. Hopefully it'll just be delayed a little bit. But stars including Sharon Rose, Sophie Louise Dan, Sophie Evans, Janie D, Cedric Neal will all feature in the new season. And the venue's going to reopen with reduced capacity and also offer some live stream shows. So weren't you supposed to be doing a show at Crazy Cox that has been rescheduled? Scheduled about 25 times.
Yes, I know. Yeah, so I had it scheduled for the 1st of December last year, and I got really, really sick and basically had to cancel. And actually quite a few of us are thinking maybe it was the corona, but we don't know if it was around back then or not, but the symptoms were very similar, I have to say. So I had to cancel it, and then the venue was so supportive and they let me move it to May, I think it was. Was it May? Yeah, May 15th or something. And and then we had to cancel again for obvious reasons. So I'm hoping third time lucky.
Absolutely.
Oh, maybe I'll call it that. Third time lucky.
Third time lucky.
No, it was so gutting because we put Craig Adams was my is my MD for it when it happens. And he'd done already, you know, we had some amazing arrangements in the bag already. And because it had been about, well, when did I do my last one? 2012, I think, was my last, like, one woman gig. So, so I think it was time, and I wanted to kind of, you know, do something new, you know, but wasn't to be, not yet anyway.
It will happen.
It will.
Right, time for some show talk. And actually, I'm really excited because throughout this series, I've been talking all about virtual stuff. But after this week, I think the next few episodes, I'm actually seeing one live thing a week, whether it be at the Open Air Theatre or at a drive-in. So actually, from next week, we will be discussing real-life things.
How exciting.
I know. So today, I want to talk about this show I've been watching on Disney+. Are you a Disney fan? Do you have Disney+?
I love Disney. And actually, I got into that that programme Encore. I don't know if you've seen that. Oh, it's just
Jennifer,
amazing.
That's what we're going to discuss.
Is it? Oh, yeah. God. No, you'd think we'd planned that, and we absolutely didn't.
We haven't. I have not told. I decided this yesterday. Oh my gosh, this is amazing.
I loved it.
For anyone who doesn't know, Encore, it's this show. It's hosted and produced by Kristen Bell, and it basically reunites casts of high school productions, and these people come back together years after they did this show at high school, and they recreate their performances once again. It sounds funny, but it's also not weirdly at all. It's very emotional because people have been through so much, and suddenly be back in a high school to be back with these people and to be reminiscing about this time of their life is emotional. And you know, lots of them have had dreams to go off and perform on Broadway, lots of them didn't, but just to be reunited with the arts is really special, really powerful. Have you watched the Anything Goes one?
Yes, I've watched them all. I watched every one of them.
I've only watched four.
is so good. I mean, they're all fantastic. And the it's just hearing these people's stories, you know, and like what's happened to, especially there's one, I can't remember which one it is, but it, I think it might be Godspell, but it's, and it's, is it Godspell? And they're a lot older, you know, they're literally graduated like 40 years ago.
Anything Goes was about 45 years later, and they were all right. In their 60s.
There you go.
And yeah. They had all been, one of them had lost a, one of their they'd lost a child.
Yeah.
And
it's just so moving.
Like there's just so many different stories, and to see, I think that one was my favourite because they're all in their 60s and they were all. It's a massive show, Anything Goes. So they couldn't learn their lines, and they had a prompt on stage, but they were just laughing so much.
Yeah,
and to see that joy.
Oh, yeah. And they just the fact that they all connect again after all that time. The one that was really moving for me, I don't want to kind of be a spoiler, but the Oklahoma one.
Okay, I need to watch it.
Yeah, I won't tell you then, but if everybody gets a chance
give us a snippet. Give us a snippet.
No, because it'll ruin it. It'll ruin it. There's a gentleman there whose life drastically changed since he was at high school, and he comes back and performs, and you'll know exactly what I mean when you see it, but I think you need to watch it for it to really kind of have the impact that it did on me. I was in floods of tears. It's a really special show. I think it's fantastic, and what an amazing opportunity for them to come back and experience that again. And you know, there's one gentleman, I can't remember what show it was, but he kind of got rid of all his nerves, and he had really bad nerves when he was a teenager, and you know, he came back and he nailed it, and it's almost like he ticked that box and kind of could close that chapter, you know.
Yeah,
it's great.
Yeah, they get closure. I completely. And I think I'm sure you'll agree with all your teaching that you do. I think it's a reminder actually of how important the arts are. And we're not just talking within the industry of the theatre industry. I mean, young people doing it at school and having access to the arts. Mm-hmm. And I hope that when this is over and when we're back at, you know, our schools reopen, that the arts aren't overlooked.
Yeah.
Because you can see by watching this show how impactful the arts were in these people's lives and how they still look back at it now. And I know that from doing the arts, it opened my eyes up and gave me all sorts of different transferable skills. And I just really, really hope that we continue to take the arts seriously in our schools.
Me too. I mean, there's so many outreach programs, you know, that run through theatre as well. That's the thing, you know, and we were just at Come From Away. I had just put together the workshop pack for us to offer to an educational establishments, you know, for schools to come and see the show and do a workshop. And because obviously it's a historical event, you know, so to be able to connect the dots and know, you know, and learn the history of what happened and then see the show and then experience the show themselves, there's such an outreach. And the thing is, it's so important, I feel, not just as a performer, but for any child to go to a dance class, an acting class, a sing, whatever, something that's creative, because it gives them the opportunity to be themselves if they're not, especially if they're not academic. And if they are academic, great, then they get the bite of the, you know, of both cakes. That's a terrible metaphor, but you know what I mean. But you know, it gives them the opportunity to experience different things, but also to learn social skills, to gain confidence, you know. And there's probably very few kids out that come from theatre schools that will go on to do it professionally, but it doesn't mean that it's not shaped who they are in some way, you know. It's such an important, the arts, creativity, all of that is just so vital in a child's upbringing, I believe.
100%. And I really think actually that it's, I know some schools are looking at focusing on core subjects when they return. And actually, I think it's one thing we haven't discussed in our industry is that element of how important it is that we continue to advocate for the arts to continue in schools. So important, so important. I don't know, what were you like when you were you in school plays? Were you performing?
I went to like the local dance school for when I was like three. So I was always in like, you know, the local dancing displays and things like that. But we did a couple of school shows. Like I remember doing Bugsy Malone at high school. I was a dancer, never played a part. I was too nervous and too shy. And then, which is so ironic, I know nowadays. And then we did Calamity Jane and I played Susan because I didn't think I could sing at the time, so that's ironic as well. But you know, I'm so lucky now that I've been able to go on and do other things. But yeah, no, I think it was I was always very kind of, I loved performing and I just loved it so much, but I was quite shy in some ways as well. Like I was never really like show-offy or one of those kids, you know. I kind of just got on with it at the side of the class and just, you know, just enjoyed myself. So I did start doing festivals when I was very young. at my first school that I went to, but then quickly realised when I was about seven, after a bad experience where I wasn't treated very well by the teacher at the time, that I needed to give that up, and it just wasn't me at all. I just realised I wasn't that competitive. So I moved over to another school, and my teacher Ian McLeod was absolutely incredible to me, and that's
whereabouts did
now.
You grow up? Whereabouts are you from?
So not far from Glasgow, Helensburgh. It's a little little seaside town on the Clyde.
You obviously, when we look at your CV, you've done so many of these, you know, so many different things, but so many of these big shows, you know, Mamma Mia, you were touring, and you did on the cruise ship as well, didn't you? And
yeah,
obviously Wicked and lots of different shows. When you kind of look back kind of now at this time we're currently in, what stands out some of your highlights? What are some of your kind of proudest moments? What are the ones you're like, I'm so grateful for that opportunity?
I think every show has meant something to me for different reasons, you know, like Lift, for example, being a part of that from the beginning, and, you know, being part of the creative process, and Wicked was my first West End show. And, you know, so to be able to call my mum and dad, and it took me 10 years to get a West End show. I was touring and I loved it, but it took me 10 years to finally get into town, and to do it in that show was just, you know, mind blowing. So to be able to phone my mum and dad and say, oh, look, it was worth it, I did it. That even, I still remember that very vividly now, just having that moment of just being able to go, I've done it, you know, after all these years of slogging. But Mamma Mia is a very special show to me. I've done it twice now. I did it once on the tour and I wasn't even supposed to be there. So one of the ladies had a bad injury. Yeah, she'd received a bad injury, so she had to take a few months off, and they didn't have a full company of swings on the tour. So I had the opportunity to go out. I learned the show. I think I got the offer on the Monday, had a costume fit on the Tuesday, flew to Zurich on the Wednesday, and I was in the show by the Saturday. So it was absolutely crazy, but amazing as well. I absolutely loved it. But then I was
and what
only
was your
there
track
for
then? Were you covering
ensemble?
Some of Dynamite?
No, I didn't even do that because I was only there for a few months. And then because it was a bit of like a, there was no kind of end to my contract. It was just, okay, as you need, you know, but if you get another job, you can go, sort of thing. Yeah. So I did. I got Jerry Springer after that and then went and joined them. So I felt like I didn't really get Mamma Mia out of my system. And I felt like I was really letting the show down by leaving. So it was, you know, so to go on and have the opportunity to do it again for Royal Caribbean, for the cruise ship, and play the role of Donna was an absolute gift. It's definitely, I think, been the biggest learning curve of my career, and when I've been able to you know I think because of her, what she's responsible for in that show, not just as a performer and, you know, being a company member and leading a company and all those things, which was my first experience of doing that. But, you know, you feel responsible for setting a standard, you know, because you want to deliver that story to the best of your ability. And I think that the opinion on Mamma Mia sometimes is that, oh, it's a fluffy show, it's ABBA, blah, blah. But actually, the way it's written, there's so much heart in that story. And I feel like if it's done by a company who care about it, then the story has so much more effect, you know. And, you know, there's so many, she has such a roller coaster of emotions through the show, that it was a huge challenge as an actress that I, you know, for the first time to do that myself and be responsible for that myself, rather than covering somebody else and maybe seeing what they're doing, what works and all those kind of things. So on a lot of levels, it was a big experience for me. And, you know, I was very grateful, and I would love to do it again. Now I'm a bit older as well. I would love the opportunity to maybe have a go at it in town.
On the cruise. Yeah, now that's right. But you come in and do it in town.
I would love to.
But of course, for me, one of the biggest crimes against theatre is that we had you as a cover for Alphabet and you never went on, right?
I know. I was devastated. I think it was just really, really bad luck that year, because they had just gotten rid of... So they have a standby, a first cover and a second cover. And in the third year that I stayed on for, I kept my memorable cover, but they were like, we may introduce this, you know, second cover again, just to have an emergency. Yeah. And then the following year... Lovely Michelle Pentecost, I think, ended up taking over that track. She actually got on quite a fair bit for it. So, and it was just a bit of, you know, luck as to who goes off, who's in the building. If I was on holiday, I was on holiday a few times. They had to get somebody back. So that would have been me if had I been in the building, you know. So there is a little bit of a, you know, a stake in my heart that I never actually got to do it in front of a paying audience. But I did get to do an open dress run with all my nearest and dearest in the audience. So at least I got that.
And there's a video somewhere. God, this has just come to me. I remember watching it of you singing Defying Gravity, I think half a step higher somewhere, which is insane.
It was so weird. I know, it was like, I used to perform a lot on the club circuit, you know, what was that club called, Two Brewers and Black Cap and all those. And I think it's in one of them. And the only track I could find was this like rock tune. And it was like, I don't think it was Kerry's version because it was another step up. And I was like, oh, so I just went for it and hoped for the best.
No, it's incredible. I think I'm sure that's years ago that I were watching that, but I was like, how could she sing this?
There's loads of people that could do that now. It's not it's quite a common thing now if you hear some of these amazing ladies that have played that role.
But thank goodness, years later, you're now Beverly Bass, you're belting out Me in the Sky.
I love it.
You know, the next, that's what all the alphas go on to do. So you're still ticking that box.
Here's
and that's
hoping.
An incredible song. That's an incredible song.
Oh, yeah. It's a tough song, actually. It's surprisingly tough because there's not really many moments in it to like breathe or swallow or, you know, all those things that you naturally do when you're singing. And, you know, I remember Rachel Tucker coming off into the wing and she was like, oh my God, I couldn't swallow. And she was doing the whole thing at one night with like all this like saliva. But it's an amazing song. Just 4.5 minutes of telling this trailblazer story is, you know, it's
absolutely good. Saying about Lift as well. Yeah, it's one of those, like that Rainy Days. It's just a beautiful storytelling number with some big notes in there.
Oh, it's a lovely, lovely, lovely song. The whole piece of Lift is just one of my favourites. Not even being biased because it's my friend that wrote it. It just genuinely is a really important piece. Yeah,
me too. This has been the biggest joy.
Oh, Andrew.
I'm so sad that it's over.
Thank you so much for having me.
Because I've basically just fallen in love with you over the last 45 minutes.
Bless you. Thank you so much.
But stay well. I know you'll be really, really busy. And
I hope so.
I cannot wait to not only come and see Come From Away, but I can't wait to come and see your gig and to see other things. Everyone needs to go and check you out on social media. Where can they find you?
That's a really good question. I don't know what my handle is.
I'm here to ask all the tricky questions.
I don't even know because I actually got hacked on Instagram.
Oh, yeah,
so
I had to delete my
account. Yeah. Oh, here we go. Jennifer L. Tierney 80 is my Instagram handle. So please come and join me there. And Twitter, actually, I'm on there a bit more often, which is Jen_Tierney80. So yeah, I'd love to come and hear from you all if you get a chance to pop over and say hi.
Amazing. Yeah, everyone needs to go and check you out. Go and check you out. And I cannot wait to see you soon.
Thank you, my darling. Take care of yourself and thank you for doing this.
No worries, no worries. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the West End Frame Show. Make sure you subscribe. It'd be amazing if you could leave a little rating and review. Check out our interviews podcast, In The Frame, which continues this Friday. And we always love hearing from you, so you can find West End Frame on Instagram, Twitter and on Facebook. I'll be back next week for another stagey catch-up. Thank you, Jennifer.
Thank you so much. Take care.